Well, welcome everyone to another Horsing Around podcast. Andy Lindahl, Andrew Mason. I am back in Denver. Andrew's in the middle of the football world out in Indianapolis at the Combine. And Andrew, I'll tell you what, it's always active. It feels extra active this week. Just kind of give us a feel of what's going on out there.
Well, because you've got the new league year starting next Thursday and the legal tampering period for potential free agents that you're bringing from their team starting on Tuesday, you're seeing a much more robust rumor mill than even some past combines. And it's been pretty thick at past combines. I mean, now you've got rumblings today about a potential three-way deal involving the Cowboys, the 49ers, Washington, with Tony Romo and Kirk Cousins and draft picks at the center of it. Certainly, there's a little more urgency toward everything because of the compressed schedule between the scouting combine and the start of free agency. And and also it just kind of dovetails nicely because you're getting an extra feel for these players, and maybe the interviews, and maybe seeing some of these players in person after just watching film on them, it's changing what you feel are needs that you can fill in free agency, or you and wait till the draft. Maybe you say, okay, well, we're more comfortable with some of these guys at a certain position that maybe we'll wait to fill those needs until the draft rather than striking in free agency. So it's a very, very fluid situation around the league. Because of how they've crammed in the schedule leading up to the start of the league year.
You know, Andrew, I find it so interesting because a lot of the media here in town took John Elway's comments on Wednesday when he was, I believe, the last to meet the media. Of course, Vance Joseph, I think, was the first to meet the media that day. John Elway basically not closing the door and adding a veteran quarterback. That's led to two straight days of everyone just saying, hey, Tony Romo's coming here. I don't know how you feel about it. I still don't think the Broncos want to spend $25 million of their cap room in a trade to acquire Tony Romo and that cap number. Now, maybe they acquire him and work the cap number down. But as you said, with this three-way deal possibly coming out, it makes it fascinating on so many fronts. A, the Broncos may not ever get their shot at Tony Romo if, in fact, they were interested. B, I would be almost amazed. I'm not surprised Jerry Jones isn't going to go all the way of doing the solid of just letting Romo be a free agent, but to trade him to Washington, which is where he would land in that three-way deal, correct? Or would he?
Yeah.
Because Cousins then would go to San Fran, Dallas would get picks. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if maybe Jerry Jones wants to do Romo a favor and put him somewhere where you've got some quality targets and you've got a very capable offensive mind at the controls in Jay Gruden, someone who can who can create an offense that can suit the skill sets of almost anybody. He's one of those bright minds that can do that. But boy, if Dallas is willing to trade Romo in the division, if I'm Washington, I'm thinking the words of Mike Brady on the Brady Bunch: caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Well, look, Andrew, we talked about it before. And you know what? I thought John Elway addressed it eloquently. This is why we like covering John Elway. He was honest about things. He's not afraid to show you a little bit of his hand. Now, obviously, like a good poker player, he's not going to show you the full deck of cards, but he'll tease you with a card or two. And he said, I understand it. People get excited when a veteran quarterback comes to town. It does when you know the history of a guy versus the unknown of will you tap the potential of a rookie, it gets a fan base excited. We saw that happen with a Peyton Manning. Let's be honest about it. Despite what ended up happening, Houston got energized because there was a fairly decent highlight film for Brock Osweiler to show up with last year. So he acknowledged adding veterans does make a town excited. But you're right. Ed Werder said it best. The last two significant hits that Romo took, not crushing hits, but significant contact, ended his season. And you do have to ask yourself, why is Dallas so willing to trade him to a place where he can show his fans what he can still do?
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the hits, and that's obviously with Elway and Vance Joseph, both neither of them closing the door on a veteran quarterback. Like you say, people get excited, but a thing that I look at when I look at it from the Broncos' perspective, they both Elway and Vance Joseph said a couple of key things that show that the offensive line is still the priority heading into free agency. You know, Vance Joseph said, you know, says it's a big need. And interestingly, he dismissed the idea of signing a right tackle and moving him to left tackle. He compared left tackle to a shutdown corner, and said, no, we're looking for a left tackle. And then John Elway, I asked him about how going from a zone-based scheme to a scheme that had gap elements, power elements, zone elements, how that would help and affect the offensive linemen. And he only mentioned two current offensive linemen in his response. Matt Paradis, who I think we all know is, you know, the linchpin of that line. And once he gets back from surgery, you're going to plug him right back in at center. And Max Garcia, and he didn't mention anybody else, which leads me to believe that they only know those two spots as free agency begins, and they may well be looking for three starters. And again, showing that offensive line is going to be the top priority when the league year begins next week. And you can quarterback, and if you brought in Tony Romo, I mean, look, you'd have to have you would only be able to bring him in if you could fix the offensive line. And fixing the offensive line, if you're bringing in two or three starters, is going to take you upwards of $30 million in average annual value.
Yeah, so the bottom line is, for those that aren't doing the math, Andrew just laid it out for you, a trade is not in the works. Everybody has said if this is going to go down with Tony Romo, it's going to have to be a release and hopefully sign him on your terms. And then if he is released, you know, Andrew, it's interesting. We've never really talked about this. Romo will have options. Houston is said to be interested. And I know you've been out there where Bill O'Brien, he didn't say Brock Osweiler was the starter. He simply said he'll be allowed to compete for the starting job. There are many that think that maybe even Houston somehow could get in the conversation, and they would have a strong look. They've got a pretty good offensive line and a very good defense. They could be just as attractive to Romo, who, as I've read, doesn't really want to leave Texas, as Denver would. So this whole thing is not as easy as maybe it would appear, even if Tony Romo is released.
Yeah, not at all. And, you know, Houston's a great example. I mean, that's a team that has a lot of the same attributes as the Broncos do. So it's not like, I mean, the only thing, the difference that the Broncos have is that they actually have gotten over the hump in recent years, and Houston hasn't even really made the hump. So it's because they haven't even made a conference championship game to this point in their history. But yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, if this may well end up turning into one of those situations where the best move might be the one you don't make.
Well, and look, I again, to reiterate what John Elway said from the podium, he told us this isn't a move about next year. Whatever happens at the quarterback position is a move for long-term success, which I truly believe in. But speaking of next year, Andrew, here's where I do think it gets tricky. Now, look, I'm going to say this again. You already know this. I'm a huge Trevor Siemian fan. I'm not knocking Paxton Lynch, but I don't know where Paxton Lynch's next level is. In my deep gut, it tells me Paxton Lynch is still probably a year away from making a serious charge at the starting job. And again, that would fit within the timeline promised by the scouts when he was drafted. So Denver fans, I would say, don't panic just yet. There's too much panic about everything going on in this town, period, frankly. But for me, I'd like to see what Trevor Siemian can be, but he does have to stay healthy. You know, I think a next step is definitely there. But you've got to stay healthy. That does involve fixing the offensive line. But I will say next year I think is critical for the Broncos when we talk about the defensive window. I don't know about you, and I certainly understand why Kansas City did it, but I'm not going to lie to you. I raised an eyebrow when I saw the money that Eric Berry got. And with T.J. Ward getting near, you know, being able to hit the market again, as they did once with Justin Houston and his big contract, Bronco fans may need to see what happened in K.C., as we start setting market values for very good safeties.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And of course, and in fact, Elway was asked specifically about T.J. Ward, because you've seen in the last few years how when they really want to keep a guy, they're out in front. They're getting it done anywhere from 3 to 8 months before they lose complete team control of that guy. Just look at, you know, signing Brandon Marshall when he was a restricted free agent, Emmanuel Sanders last year, Darian Stewart last season. And he said, and Elway said, you know, it's something that we'll look at. But in the big picture, you look at how they've drafted two safeties in last year's drafting, Justin Simmons and Will Parks, and they appear to like both of them an awful lot. And Simmons in particular, that center field element that the Broncos really haven't had in a long time. Someone who can just kind of be back there and can make can read the play as it develops, make plays on the ball, and cause some playmaking havoc and takeaways on the back end. And they've re-upped with Darian Stewart, so it'll be interesting. And that may kind of be one of those storylines that simmers this year. What happens with T.J. Ward, and if the Broncos are able to keep him in the fold, or if they end up moving on because they feel they can spend the money better elsewhere, and they're going to have, and you know, the need for upgrades, you know, continually exists. I mean, you know, and you're going to have to re-sign some guys as well. So that's going to be fascinating to see play out, no doubt.
I wanted to ask you a question, Andrew, because again, you now have been able to witness all of Vance Joseph's press conferences in person, including the one he did the other day. I heard some banter around town on the radio. Now I'm a radio guy. We've got a lot of time to fill, so I kind of understand where it comes from. But some people worried about, oh, Vance Joseph didn't handle this press conference as well. He seemed nervous, this and that. I would say anybody that felt that way about the middle press conference when they introduced the coaches could not feel that way in my mind about the one that just took place on Wednesday. I would also say for those that are kind of throwing that opinion out there, you're asking a lot of questions of a guy in Vance Joseph that, despite calling this a reboot, which it is, I would say it's still a bit of a tricky reboot. There's still some things to figure out on this roster. And I'm not sure the man that just showed up and was able to watch tape and knows half his roster was significantly injured at certain points. Some of them are getting older, like a DeMarcus Ware. I think he's trying to answer questions, but I'm not sure he's fully digested everything he wanted to do just yet. I felt like when you heard him on Wednesday, it certainly sounds like he's more comfortable, I think, with just his own gut feel about what the team needs to do now going forward and how he can contribute when John Elway asks him a question. What was maybe your takeaway?
I got that sense as well. I think also the fact that they did pursue Earl Mitchell, they didn't get him, of course. Mitchell signed with San Francisco. But the fact that they've kind of started the process of investigation of guys, talking to guys, I think it's because he's two or three steps down the road already on that, I think that's helped him get more comfortable and get into the groove of things. And also, I think kind of on the inside, having Mike McCoy in that room is helping him out tremendously as well, because that's another person that he can kind of lean on for ideas and for scouting reports and, you know, to kind of provide some administrative assistance when the need arises, because McCoy's been a head coach for 4 years and McCoy's kind of got the offensive side down. I mean, but I did sense a lot more confidence and assertiveness, especially not only when he was at the podium, but when he talked off to the side for another 10 minutes or so with local media. I felt like it was a guy that was pretty firmly in control of things.
Well, it is interesting. Again, you're at the Combine. We've got a lot going on at the Combine. Today, it's Friday when we are recording this, and we were able to watch the offensive linemen and the running backs, two positions of interest anyway, because of Christian McCaffrey's presence in my mind. I want to get to the linemen in a second. Leonard Fournette, 240. He called it water weight. I kind of scoff at that, but whatever. I've got a lot of water weight problems, and I guess myself, Leonard, so kind of let me know how you get that off. But he did run a 4.45, which had a lot of people on Twitter kind of salivating at the speed with the size. But, you know, for my money, I'd like to see Christian McCaffrey come here. I think there's only one Christian McCaffrey. I think when you got to the receiving portion of the running back drills, and he is going to take part in some of the wide receiver drills as well, I think you saw what makes this kid kind of the unique at his position kind of back in my mind. Now, he didn't have the best second 40 time. He had a good first 40 time. I imagine he's going to do better than both those 40 times at the pro day. I've got to ask your opinion. Give me the buzz and tell me your opinion. Is Christian McCaffrey all of a sudden a top 15 guy that maybe doesn't even find his way to the Broncos neighborhood?
Don't know if he's a top 15 guy at this point, because you still have some, you still have some speculation and some concern just about being just a shade over 200 pounds, and also some teams really not figuring out, you know, how to classify him and you know what to view him as. You know, I've heard the phrase, do you use a first round pick on someone who's a specialist? Now, I don't agree that he's a specialist. If anything, I think he's someone who has so many different traits and abilities and ways to help you that he's sort of the exact opposite of the specialist. He can do so many different things. You can get him 15 to 20 touches a game, and you're doing it on returns. You're doing it in the running game on jet sweeps and fly sweeps, or even on some traditional carries, and you're getting him the ball as a receiving target. Now, the thing that I think is worth noting, the 40 time, you're just making sure that he hits a baseline, and the official time on him was 4.48. That's a good baseline. That's a good place to be. The thing that I look at, I tend to look at the three cone and short shuttle a bit more, because these are drills that measure quickness and changes of direction. What's interesting is in the three cone drill, he did it in 6.57 seconds. That is the second fastest of 286 running backs to do the three cone drill in the last 15 combines. And that's the thing with Christian McCaffrey. It's the quickness. And the other thing is when he did the gauntlet drill, when you're catching a bunch of passes, I don't know if I've ever seen a running back nail the gauntlet drill like he did. He's very smooth, catching it quickly, catching with his hands, not losing any speed. And, of course, we've talked about his football instincts being off the charts. I think if you liked Christian McCaffrey, you were further sold on him with his workout. And maybe if you had skepticism, I don't know if it necessarily changed your mind. But I still see him being at around 20. But yeah, it's possible. When I look at some other teams that pick around the Broncos, it would be interesting. Because I was at dinner talking, and I said, if I'm Tampa Bay at number 19, and I've got Mike Evans on the outside, could probably use an if I can work on the offensive line in free agency, can probably use another weapon for Jameis Winston. Wouldn't you think long and hard if you're the Bucs about taking Christian McCaffrey to give Winston someone on the inside and someone who's a kind of a game breaking threat to really open things up for that young quarterback? Heck, I mean, if you're Tennessee, picking earlier, do you think about Christian McCaffrey as well? Again, another guy who can really help out your young quarterback to give him some options. So, we'll see. You may be right that it may move him up, because teams may start thinking, okay, how can this young man help us in what we do? We'll see. I mean, if the Broncos really want him, they may have to go up a little bit. But if he's their guy, he's the guy they want. They'll make the moves together.
Well, what's your take on Leonard Fournette? Decided not to do the bench. Look, I understand, and I'll tell you what, he did have a nice 40 time for a man that big. But I got to tell you, with the Eddie Lacy's, the Trent Richardson's, the guys like that, there's an injury history there with him from college, and B, I know some people think he may be the next Adrian Peterson, so if he is, hats off to him. But I worry about a guy that comes, especially to the combine, a little bit heavy, and then doesn't do all the drills. There's just something I'm a little worried about with the kid. What would you say? Would you tell me maybe I shouldn't worry about the big back from LSU?
I have the same concerns, to be honest with you. The 40 time straight line speed, it's great. And for a guy who's 235, 240, 4.5, that's tremendous. But some of the other some of the other stuff in terms of the vertical jump, that measures explosion, was not what you expected from a guy of his caliber. And the ankle thing, I think, is a concern. And I've been hearing that's a concern rumbling around, even going back to the Senior Bowl, that people were concerned about that ankle and whether it was going to hold up, and whether he was worthy of being in the top half of the first round. I think Dalvin Cook of Florida State's ahead of him as a prospect. I think Cook is definitely the first running back off the board. Maybe I'll turn out to be wrong, but right now I just see him being the first one off, and I think he might not even last beyond Jacksonville near the top of the draft, because we know how Tom Coughlin likes to get a good productive running back in there to build his offense around. But Fournette, I think now there's a little bit more scrutiny to his evaluation, and I think there are some current concerns that are coming up. But then again, as I say, it only takes one team to bite. One team could say, we love him, we're willing to take that chance, and we're going to pick him, even though the rest of the league may disagree.
Tell me about this offensive line class. Obviously, from what you told us about the comments coming from both the coach and John Elway, from Vance Joseph and John Elway, offensive line of top concern. It's said to be a class that's not very impressive. Did they live up to that billing today in the drills?
Well, there were some bright spots, and the bright spots were guys who are near of the top of the draft. You had Garrett Bowles, a 295-pounder out of Utah, very good in the speed and agility drills. Fascinating backstory on him, and the way he did his media interview, very, very blunt, talked about playing nasty. I asked him a question about what football meant to him, and because figuring he would have some answer about how the sport kind of helped him get back on track after an arrest. He'd spent some time in jail. He was actually thrown out of his home by his father because things got so bad. And his response was something to the effect, I'm going to miss on the exact words, but I'm going to get the sentiment right. He said that it's, you can beat somebody up and you're allowed to do it. You can beat somebody up and you can get away with it. And he kind of talked about how football allowed him that outlet kind of for his more aggressive nature. He's calm away from the field, kind of a nasty guy on it. And I think that some teams are going to be very interested in having that kind of presence. Forrest Lamb from Western Kentucky, I think, made himself some money here at the Combine, though. I think going into this weekend, there was some talk about, okay, he might be a guard rather than a tackle, and how athletic is he? Well, it turns out that he was basically mismeasured on his arms down at the Senior Bowl, and that caused a lot of people to think, okay, he may not have the long enough arms to be a guard, to be a tackle, and you have to move him inside the guard. And he played a lot of tackle at Western Kentucky, but the arms are, I think, 32 inches, and that's sufficient for a tackle, and that's a little more natural position for him. And then he had an outstanding day, top five in the 40-yard dash, and then yesterday, 34 bench press reps that were second among offensive linemen. So he's that rare mix of speed and power, and I think Lamp has played his way into the first round. So now I think it's safe to say you're looking at four first-round offensive linemen: Garrett Bowles, Ryan Ramczyk, Cam Robinson out of Alabama, and Forrest Lamp. And Lamp may actually be a better fit for the Broncos if they decide to jump on offensive line than some of the guys there. Just very versatile, although I imagine they kind of like Bowles' nasty streak too.
You know what? I guess we'll kind of leave the draft stuff alone there. A ton more to talk about next week. Plus, when you and I record our podcast next week, we're also going to be able to assess the early goings-on in free agency, as we will officially be inside the window for that. A guy that DenverBroncos.com, and such a classy move. I was happy to see this. Always one of my favorite. I'm pretty sure you feel the same way. The Broncos wishing Ryan Harris the best. I echo those sentiments. A guy that got 10 years in the league. He was always a joy to interview. And Andrew, I know from our perspective, I want to share a couple memories about him, but I don't know how you felt about it. I always played along with the kangaroo court on the offensive line. I know enough, from Mark Schlereth to Dave Diaz-Infante. I could go on with the guys that I got to really know on the O-line, and that's fine. We always got a hearty chuckle, but let's be honest about it. It can kind of make your job as a pain, because for those that don't know it, the offensive linemen really are some of the smartest guys on the team, because they've got to study the whole defense. They don't focus on one position group. They got to see where everybody's moving around, and so they can really teach you a lot. Ryan was the one to buck the trend. I did so many pregame interviews with Tom Nayland giving him the death stare as if he was the next defensive tackle he had to take on. And Ryan never cared. He was always so great to us. And frankly, Andrew, I think that's a guy, when we talk about leadership voids in the locker room, and I think some guys took up this year, but obviously there was something missing on the offensive side of the ball. 18's an easy one to go to, but I think fans don't really know what Ryan Harris did to make sure that offensive line got on the same page so we could help raise that. He certainly did a lot to help raise that Super Bowl trophy.
He was almost another coach on the field, I would say, in that 2015 season, because you had a new blocking scheme coming in. You had Rick Dennison and Gary Kubiak were back, so there was you're bringing back the zone blocking scheme, and I think for some of the holdovers, it was a little tough to grasp. But Ryan Harris, he's played almost his entire career in that kind of scheme. He's a pro, and the thing is, he's a great communicator. And obviously, us being in the media, we appreciate that. Like you mentioned, the stuff for the pregame shows. I mean, how many times did I ask Ryan Harris a question that he gave just an incredibly thoughtful response to. And that, and I think that helped him in the locker room as well, and he was able to kind of take some guys under his wing and kind of be another tutor for getting everyone on the same page. And don't forget, when they brought him in, it was right after Ryan Clady had torn his ACL in off-season practice, and you're staring down the barrel of having to start a rookie in Tyson Brillo right away. You bring in Ryan Harris to kind of fill out the unit, but first provide some depth, and then get everyone on the same page. Just a tremendous job. And then, of course, he had to have his role expanded after Cimbrillo himself had a season-ending injury, and then you're looking at Ryan Harris over there, on the left side, and just hanging in there. Just all the respect in the world for him, and he's one of those under the radar guys, without whom I don't think you're talking about the Broncos winning Super Bowl 50. Quite frankly, I think he was that important to the team that year.
My favorite Ryan Harris story, I've got a million of them, but one of them will always be, I asked him, if you were interviewed for America's Game, the documentary they do on all the Super Bowl champions, what would be one of the stories you tell? And he told me last year on the radio, as he kicked out on the block that led to the game-winning touchdown in overtime against the Patriots in the November meeting between the two teams, he told me, as he kicked outside to get that winning block, he saw Malcolm Butler coming, and he thought to himself right before he buried him so CJ could go past, there's the hero of the Super Bowl. And it always made me just chuckle that you would be that aware of who you're about to hit in the middle of a game. So a great guy.
He's the one guy that I would think would actually be aware of that in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't know if anyone else would notice that. I'm sorry.
I don't even think, I'd like to tell you I'd be that thoughtful into something. I would think there's a white jersey. I need to go get him, right?
Yeah. And he's thinking about the place in history. What a guy to have in the locker room. And I'm glad that he's going to stay in the Denver area. He's a very good man to have in our community, and I hope he stays in Denver for many, many years to come, because we're a better place with Ryan Harris living on the Front Range.
Yeah, we'll just make it our secret that I told everybody this, but he is on in the afternoons on 9:50 a.m. So you didn't hear that from the 760 guy, though, just to be safe, and the KOA guy. Hey, Andrew, I look forward to getting you back in town next week, breaking it down, and certainly these podcasts, not that they haven't been fun. Look, you and I have enjoyed ourselves, but let's be honest, we're getting down to business and the new year's underway next week.
Yeah, and I wonder just how different the roster is going to look even by this time next week, next Friday, one day into free agency. I wonder if it will always already look different, because the Broncos are sitting there with about $43 million of cap room, which puts them, on the upper half of the middle tier of the league. So a lot of teams are going to be spending, but I think the Broncos are going to have to make some strikes right away if they're going to fix some of what ails this team and get it ready for 2017.
And I might point out to everybody, Andrew Whitworth apparently letting Cincinnati know he's going to test the market. That's a left tackle that Andrew Mason wouldn't mind seeing paying one of those early visits. So we'll update you next week. Andrew, man, enjoy the rest of the combine.
No problem. And as you'll mention, I'll mention here, plenty more to come. We actually had some of our staff catching up with some people around the country here at the Combine, so stay tuned and keep listening to this special edition of the Horse and Round Podcast.
Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
We're back here on the Horse and Around Podcast from the 2017 NFL Combine. I'm Caroline Disley along with Eric Dalala, and we've got a special visitor here, Adam Beasley from the Miami Herald, to talk about our new head coach, Vance Joseph.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Adam. You, of course, covered Vance down in Miami when he was the defensive coordinator down there this past season. And we were talking the other day, and you said his press conference every week was the highlight in terms of media availability. What stood out from those press conferences, and is there one maybe that stands out above the rest?
Oh, it was just his brutal, unflinching honesty, both good and bad, about his players and even himself. If you asked him a question about how someone was playing, he would not skirt the issue if the player wasn't playing well. And it's the kind of it just speaks to the kind of accountability that he brings to a franchise. He's not going to tell members of the media anything he hasn't told the players already. And so it's not like a surprise. It's not like someone's picking up a newspaper and seeing their coach trashing them for something they didn't even know about. No, he tells them, hey, look, you need to get better at X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to demand that accountability from you. And I think it's pretty incredible. One that stands out to me, however, was I believe it was after the 49ers game when Colin Kaepernick ran wild. The Dolphins ended up winning that game because they made a last-second stop at the goal line, but they were up, I think, the Dolphins were up 17, and the Niners came the whole way back and would have tied the game up at the very end if not for a game-saving stop. We asked him, well, what happened? What was going on? Why was Colin Kaepernick able to run for, I think it was like 150 yards or something? And he said it was on me. My rush scheme was bad, and I didn't adjust soon enough. And that's the kind of accountability the Broncos fans should expect from their new coach. He brings it. I mean, and it's the same if it's the 53rd guy on the roster or Von Miller. He is going to bring that accountability.
Do you think he'll be able to still be that candid with the media now that he's a head coach?
I don't see how he's going to change because that's how he's gotten to where he is in his career. I mean, he's one of those coaches that's pretty well respected. Obviously, Denver had great familiarity with him the last time around. They were looking for a head coach. He was one of their candidates. And I don't think he is going to change who he is. He got to the summit. He got to the one of the 32 best coaching jobs in the world by being who he is, and I would not expect that to change at all.
Adam, we've heard a lot that the Broncos were looking for a leader of men, as John Elway said time and time again. How have you seen that type of CEO mentality, persona, from Vance during his season down in Miami?
Yeah, I think a couple of things stand out. One, Mario Williams came to Miami with not the best reputation from Buffalo. He was portrayed in the media up there as kind of a selfish guy. He comes to Miami, and this is the former number one pick in the draft, and he gets his role flashed as the season progresses and doesn't make a peep about it. He doesn't complain to us either on or off the record. He's not a problem inside the locker room, and I think that speaks to the job Vance did in communicating to him, hey, this is for the betterment of the team. Another example is another defense vet for the Dolphins who actually had an excellent year, Cam Wake, 34 years old last year, coming off the torn Achilles, and he was a part-time player for the first half of the season. And a player of Cam Wake's caliber usually is not accustomed to being a part-time player. I mean, he's used to being the guy who's in there in all the critical situations. And again, he handled it like a pro, and I think a lot of that speaks to the message he was getting from both Adam Gase and Vance Joseph. I see a lot of similarities between the two of those coaches, and obviously Adam had a great deal of success in year one of Miami, and I don't see any reason why Vance doesn't have the same level of success year one of Denver.
Was there a specific instance maybe or something that you saw that he really learned from Gase as a first-time head coach that he'll bring with him?
I've listened to the press conferences both out in Denver and here in Indianapolis. And I think what he mentioned was Adam's ability to make the hard decision and sometimes the unpopular decision. Here's an example. After the Tennessee game here, the Dolphins lost. It was an ugly game, one of the worst games of the season, to fall to 1-4. And they did so in a pretty embarrassing fashion. They were missing almost half their offensive line. And the guys just stepped in to just a terrible job. The next day, they were cut. Two starters from week five were cut the next day. Three linemen in total were gone, and it changed the season. It showed how things were going to happen. Now, here's a more better example, obviously, with this Vance-related. Byron Maxwell, who was a big acquisition, one of the big acquisitions of the 2016 offseason, cornerback who won the Super Bowl as part of the Legion of Boom in Seattle, comes to Miami and stinks. First month of the season, he stunk. Vance did some benchmarks. Even they benched him in a nationally televised game. Did not Byron Maxwell lost his starting job and had to earn it back. And when he did, he became one of the better corners in the AFC, certainly the AFC East. And so it's just this idea that if you coddle players, more often than not, they're not going to respond. They're not going to fix what's wrong. So it's not like the Dolphins coaches are being petty or being mean-spirited and are trying to embarrass these players. They were just trying to maximize their ability. And I think Vance, that's what he does very well. You understand the buttons you've got to push. And I think he got some of that from Adam Gase.
I know you've seen more than one head coach in his first year down in Miami from your time covering the team. In your opinion, what's something that Vance is going to maybe struggle with a little bit at the beginning? It's going to be a challenge, but then as the year goes on, especially for a first-time head coach, it gets easier and easier.
Yeah, I think for all these coaches, the bigness of the job, how you're responsible for so much more, because for his entire career, Vance Joseph has been responsible for coaching defensive backs and then coaching the defense for 1 year. Now he's in charge of coaching the entire team, setting a schedule, figuring out when travel is going to be, setting the message for a franchise. Yes, he has experience talking to the media. He did every week this past season as a defensive coordinator, but now he is the face and voice of that franchise. Juggling things like the salary cap, and obviously he's not in charge of personnel, but he will have a big say in sure the kind of player he wants. Is he going to be okay when Elway tells him, you know what, this is going to happen, we don't have the money for that, what's next, what's plan B? All these things are new to a position coach or a coordinator because it was never his say. He was basically, hey, here's what you've got to work with. Go get us the best defensive back coach you can. Go get us the best defense you can. There's so much more that's involved in a head coach beyond the X's and O's. And I think there's a learning adjustment period for any new head coach, and I think Vance will be no different.
From talking to him the first month or so that he's been here, I can definitely see that I think he's already starting to wrap his brain around that a little bit. And Adam, thank you so much for taking the time with us. You obviously have a lot of insight on Vance from his year down in Miami, so thank you.
Yeah, you've got a good one out there, and treat him well, all right?